Hello and welcome to episode 135 of Just Get a Real Job. I'm of course your host Jamie McKinley, and this is a podcast where we attempt to demystify the creative industries by speaking to a wide range of creatives at different stages of their careers. I've been doing this for 135 episodes. I've finally found a simple way of sort of summing up what this podcast is, so let me know if you can think of anything better. But I'm really, really excited about this week's episode, because for those of you that haven't heard, there's a brilliant new series called Dinosaur, which is out now on BBC iPlayer and Hulu. I've seen the first three episodes of it and I absolutely love it. And joining us on the podcast this week is the director of that show, Niamh McEwan, who was a brilliant person to speak with, and it was really, really interesting to sort of hear about Niamh's honest experiences starting out in this industry as a director and a writer. Because as well as directing Dinosaur, Niamh has written and directed several shorts. She's made comedy pilots before as well, including The Farm and Stunners on BBC Scotland. Normally record this podcast a couple of weeks before as well, but we only recorded this one last night, so it's very much hot off the press. We haven't had many directors on this podcast either, so it was really interesting to sort of hear about Niamh's pathway into directing Dinosaur, what she did before that, and some of the highs and lows of having a creative career as well, and some of the day-to-day stuff that directors get up to. So a really interesting conversation. For anyone listening to this one, if you're into directing particularly, you might be interested in the two-parter we did with Oz and Marcus of the Directors Take podcast a few weeks ago as well, because there's some similar themes that cross over on this as well. But love chatting to Niamh for this week's episode, and I hope you guys enjoy. Just also want to quickly say as well, a massive shout out and thank you to everyone that listened to last week's brilliant episode with Adair Murray, who's a script editor and musician and is one of my colleagues at River City. Had some lovely feedback for that episode, and I'm glad people connected with that one. It's a really interesting chat, so I'd urge people to go and listen to that as well if this is your first time ever listening or you haven't done so yet. But without much further ado, this is episode 135 of Just Get a Real Job. Enjoy. Creative industries are merely mess. Artists lie their goods are torn to shreds. The government will spoil your hopes and dreams by offering a useless retraining scheme. Such amazing talent, why can't you see that the government has decimated the industry? And now the years of hard work could be thrown away. And people who don't care, well, they will say, just get a real job. Niamh, thank you very, very much for coming on Just Get a Real Job. It's lovely to meet you for the first time. And we're recording this, obviously, the day after Dinosaur, which you directed, has just hit the screen. So congrats on the show, and yeah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. This is my favourite podcast to do because it's my first podcast. But I'm like I was honest. Saying before we started, you're such a grafter. You've done so well with it, so I'm happy to be here.
No, a pleasure. Thank you very much. No, I watched the first three episodes of Dinosaur. I had to sort of rush it because we were recording this today, and it obviously just came out yesterday, but... No, I really, really enjoyed it. It's really nice to see, like, you know, it's a Scottish show on screen, and to see actors who I've worked with before, who I know of, on screen is just a really nice thing. And again, it's a great show for, like, representation, especially, like, autism in such a positive way. So, yeah, no, a massive congrats. Looking forward to sort of chatting about it in Sweet. More detail.
Exciting. Yeah, hot off the press, you know? I'm actually not doing anything. I'm just, like I was saying, I'm just kind of back to writing, but I'm staring at walls and, yeah, I don't know. So it's been nice to kind of celebrate Dinosaur coming up out, and you can finally talk about it, and finally, like, my friends and family have a context to where I went missing. Like, I literally went missing for, like, 9 months. But obviously, I was still in touch with them, but it's good for them to see it, and hopefully that was worth it, you know, my absence in their lives. And I'm trying to be a better friend, so, yeah.
I mean, I think what's going to be interesting to also chat to you about, you're saying obviously working out for 9 months, I'm quite curious, like, the different stages of that, because as I was saying to you off air, like, we haven't had many directors on the podcast either, so I think it's going to be interesting for people to sort of hear about what directing a sort of comedy show in 2023/24 is like and stuff. But do you want to sort of kick off by, just in case any listeners who are, you know, don't know who you are, do you want to just quickly introduce yourself, just give us a quick recap of who you are, etc.?
Yeah, so my name's Niamh McEwan, and I'm a writer and director who's based in Glasgow. And I grew up in Dumfries. Both my parents are Irish and now live in Ireland. So I don't know why I felt like putting that out there, but I did. So I don't have a hometown anymore. Like, I don't have a home now, I guess. But yeah, so I grew up in Dumfries and then moved to Edinburgh to study film at Napier. And then graduated in 2018. And then kind of just worked full-time jobs, basically, and made shorts. And I've made a lot of shorts now. And yeah, I just love making stuff, basically. And eventually got signed with an agent. And my first day of freelance was, like, first day of COVID. So it was, like, an interesting, like, I was like, oh, okay, this is what life's going to be like now. But yeah, so I've been freelancing since 2020 and just started to kind of mainly support myself through writing, a lot of development. And then kind of was a director for hire, I guess, for BBC Studios, and then I just did Dinosaur. And I know that sounds so straightforward and so easy, but yeah. My God, like I've really been through the trenches. Like, it has been like such a full-on, all-consuming process to get here, and a lot of hard work. But I'm very happy to be here. So
no, it's really interesting to have you on, and as you say, like, I'm glad you're sort of being open about the fact that it wasn't just like a waltz in the park, and I'm sure loads of people listening will relate to that, and we'll still be on that journey going like, I don't know what I'm doing, and this is really hard. So no, I'm interested to sort of talk to you about that path, but just to cast your mind a bit further back, like, what were your sort of earliest memories? Were you always into like TV and film? Did you always want to sort of write and direct, or did that come a bit later?
Yeah, so I think it's funny, I was thinking about this the other day, and when I was a kid, I was very like artistic. I was very like drawing all the time, painting all the time. I wasn't really writing, like, even when in primary school, when it came to short stories or poems, I was really bad at that. I was just confused by it. But so when I was a kid, I was like, I want to be an artist, and to me, an artist was a painter. And I was like, I want to go to Glasgow School of Art. And then my artistic abilities peaked at the age of like 8, and I was like, oh, okay. Well, at the age of 8, I was like, God, I gotta think about my career, you know. So then I wanted to be a primatologist for a while. Like, I was obsessed with monkeys as a kid. I don't know why.
I'm glad you said what that was.
Yeah.
I was like, what does that mean?
You're like, what is that? And then I did biology at school, and I was like, this is boring. Like, I obviously respect it to all the biologists out there, but it just wasn't creative enough. And then when I was about 14, I have a brother who's a few years older than me, and him and his friends, they kind of got into cinema, but to them, cinema is like Scorsese, Tarantino, like all these kind of like, we're young and we're watching these gangster films, and like, we're not allowed, but we're gonna do it. So they were very much in the like club watching those, and I tried to like join in, and I would pretend to have seen all these films and be like, yeah, that like gangster film. The truth of the matter is, I never saw any of these films, but I was pretending to be this.
Just to fit in.
Yeah, and then to try and like, I could hear them talking about like directors, you know, and like a bit of like cinema language, and I remember trying to, like you say, fit in. And then simultaneously, someone, probably my mum or my aunt, gave me a book that was like a film companion for Twilight. So Twilight had kind of come out. And it was Catherine Hardwicke's director notebook. And it was kind of like a very simplified version of what that is, I guess. But it was scrapbooks, short lists, script pages, and things like that. And I was so obsessed with it. You know, like visually, I was like, this is so exciting. Like, having seen the film and seeing a bit of the process, I was like, this is crazy. And I think also for me, it was quite important to receive that, because I honestly like realized people made films when my brother was talking about Martin Scorsese. But to me, who was like 14, 15 year old, who like has no show business connections, it was kind of good to be like, oh, great, like women can direct too, and this is amazing. And then I started to like make my own film. So I had like one of those like flip cameras or whatever, like, you know, the small portrait ones. And so yeah, I just started to make films, and then just became like absolutely obsessed with it, like right from the age of 14 to now. And it's just something that I just can't stop. Like, I always have to be writing something, like making something. I'm like obsessed, and I feel like it almost feels like my body's like vibrating when I'm like thinking about an idea. And yeah, and then I guess I went to uni after that, but when I went to uni, I kind of wanted to be a cinematographer or an editor, because I guess when I was making, like, my friends, they were always up for helping me, but it was just me and a camera and like my dad's laptop to cut it together. And then I went into uni, and then I somehow came out as a writing director. I'm actually really not sure how that happened, because I feel like people go the opposite way, right? They kind of go in and they think, oh, I only kind of know what a director does, and they kind of come out with other more employable special skills, you know? But yeah, that's how I kind of got into it.
Interesting. It's interesting you say that you originally wanted to be a cinematographer, because obviously watching Dinosaur is very visual and very like beautifully shot, and like, I don't know, like, you clearly put your own stamp on that as well. So I think you'd clearly taken that in still, despite being a writer-director. And I suppose they all tie into each other anyway.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I think that my process is quite like visual. Like, even, I didn't write Dinosaur, but even when I'm writing, I'm like mood boarding and like actually shortlisting at the exact same time. And I can't quite separate the two within my own work. Like, if I'm on set of something I've written, I really can't. Like, I find it quite hard to like trust the script, I guess. But for being on Dinosaur, it was so refreshing, because we had these like great scripts that were written by Matilda Curtis and Ashley Story, and there was a wider writing team as well. There was Robin as well, and there was a writer's room too. There was an amazing writing team on this, and they were so skilled at what they did, and it was just so nice to... Honestly, it was such a privilege to be handed like 6 scripts, to be like, could you go and make this? And it just felt so nice to like stick your teeth into something, and
No, very good scripts to get, I'm sure, as well. Yeah. I mean, we'll get into Dinosaur in more detail, but I'm just going to ask this now while we're on it. But like, how do you find direct? Like, obviously, you're as a writer director, just directing something is it hard to not want to slightly interfere with the scripts? I know you get an input as a director, but how was that? Especially also directing like Ashley, who obviously is such a big creator of the show, who's also your lead in the show.
Was that ever
tricky, or was that actually quite straightforward?
It was so straightforward, and I really like working that way. I feel like all the scripts I've shot that I've not written, I've worked with writer-performers. So there was Stunners, and then there was The Farm, and I've just done another couple of shorts for BBC Comedy and Channel 4. And they're writer-performers, and I find I like love working with writer-performers because I think there's an element of like making someone's dream come true. Like they've got the script and they're so excited. It might be their first like credit. And I kind of just need to get a sense of, okay, what were you thinking about when you wrote this? And they all kind of share references with me. And then I'll be like, okay, great, I really see it like this. And sometimes it's like tonal references. And I'm just like here like with a lot of visuals as well. And it kind of feels like I'm making the film for the lead performer. Like I feel like, yes, I come with my own vision, my own ideas. But I really like respect theirs as well as the writer. And I think some directors might get worried about working with writer-performers in a way of like, oh no, I can't, you know, say anything bad about the script. But actually what I like is if we're on set and as a director, if I'm really taking it in the wrong direction, like that's, and I want to create a safe space where like the writer or performer who hasn't written it can say, actually, I really feel like the instinct lies here, and then we've kind of follow that. But then, you know, with Dinosaur, it was such a privilege, like we all had such a great working relationship and what was so special about it was my first television show, but it was also Ashley's first television show, and it was Matilda's first television show as a creator and a writer, and it was Brian, the producer's first TV show. He comes from a film background, and it was so nice because we were all there and we all had the experience. We all knew we could do it, but it was just nice to be like, this, it really is our first time.
Oh, wow. No, I suppose that must be quite liberated. All in this together.
Yeah.
Gives it that spark, and I think it has that fresh energy that you can tell that watching the show.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that because I really feel like that's what was so fun about it. And, you know, when it came to the scripts, like, I did just say about getting handed 6 scripts. You don't get 6 at once, obviously, you know. You kind of come in dribs and drabs, and it's so exciting to get a script. You're like, oh my God, yes. And what I liked about shooting, and particularly with Ashley, like as a performer, she is so sharp and so up for changing things on the day. And there'd be many times where, like, it would be like, oh, this doesn't quite fit, you know, like with the way I'd say things, can I say this, can I do this? And so we did a lot of like not reworking, but we didn't change anything major, but we just, everybody, Ashley, the rest of the cast, they gave everything. If it's like physical comedy or if it's like a line, everybody was like, we just threw them around. And I always feel like as a director, I really want to be collaborative and want to make sure that everybody, Ashley and everybody else, has the same way of, oh, do we have time to try it this way? And my answer is like, yeah, absolutely. You know, if it is totally wrong, like, we obviously don't use it, but like that's what I love about actors is like their instincts are so good, you know. Like I really imagine a scene one way, and then as soon as they do a dry read, I'm like, oh, this is massively different, but let's run with it, you know. So yeah,
thank you for the answer. That's really interesting, and I suppose it is all about collaboration. I think that's the biggest lesson I've got from this podcast and from being a script editor for like the last 3 or so years. It's like all the best writers I've worked with and all the best projects I've worked on have all been good at the collaboration aspect of it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not just one person pulling the whole thing.
Yeah, because I think like, and you'll obviously know this with the productions you've worked on, I really think that the vibe on set can be felt on screen. And I think 100%. Particularly within comedy, like I want to have this like lightness and this fun. And it also means that I have to be an actor, because when I'm like, oh my God, we're so behind on time, I really want to like not show the cast particularly that. And even the crew, I kind of don't want them to feel like, oh shit, you know. And so yeah, it's kind of funny to have to also act with the actors, because I'm pretending that, yeah, this is true, we've got all the time. Yeah, let's go for another, we've got all the time in the world. And then be like, fuck, we really don't. Like, be like, oh no. Yeah, no, it is great. But I do feel like, I think the spirit of the shoot ends up on the screen. So it's like really important to take the time to make sure that everybody kind of has everything that they need. But obviously it's television and we're shooting so fast and we've, you know, like you're always up against time and money, but I really am like, if it's not fun, like, you shouldn't do it. Like, I really am like, I feel like, you know, I've definitely been challenged by Dinosaur. There's definitely like, oh my goodness, you know, there was moments I was like, I'm like, definitely feel out of my comfort zone. But I really was always like, I was always having fun. And that's something that I've always done, like, ever since I was making shorts. I was like, I literally am doing it for fun. And also just to, like, entertain people as well, you know. So, yeah.
No, it's amazing to hear that. I think it is all about that. And I think our generation of, not to generalise, there's lots of amazing people who are older in the industry that want to make change, but I do feel like most people sort of that around this age or this part of the industry do tend to be quite like a bit more forward thinking about things, and they do have a slightly different attitude how they want to make things. So it's good to see that like you're getting the opportunity to do that and it's actually like happening on screen, etc.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I also think so much of that is me coming in and the cast, and we're all kind of like newish, and but having the support structure within the production of like working with really experienced crew who like know more, way more than I do, and working with Brian, our producer, and Sarah and Kat, our execs. It was just so good because they were really like there to surround us with like the best team and also enable us to do our best work, which meant the fun element, the lightness, and it never felt like we were being watched. It never felt like anybody was breathing down our neck. I mean, of course, the AD Wendy's always like, we're running out of time. But it never felt like anybody was watching or judging us. And yeah, it was just really nice to come in and do it our own way. And I learned a lesson from my DP on Dinosaur, Stephen Cameron Ferguson. He's from Cumbernauld, but it's kind of London-based, and he's done a lot of comedies and some dramas as well. And he was just like, don't let anybody tell you that this is the way it's done. Like, you do it the way that you want to do it, you know, and as long as you're not hurting anybody, or like, you know, you just never take that as an answer from someone, or never let anybody say that to you. And like, it was such a good lesson to learn, because I felt like if anybody did say it to me, I'd be like, well, actually, you know, like, it felt good to be validated by that of like, okay, yes, it's my first time, but actually I know how I want to do it, you know.
Yeah, and just to have that trust must be really nice, and quite like, again, feel supported but also feel trusted to to make good things. Yeah, for sure. We'll talk about Dinosaur and lots of these, so I wanted to ask how it all came around, and I also want to sort of talk about your career and like some of the pathway to Dinosaur and stuff. But I also want to ask about how, where you're from's influenced you as a creative. So obviously you're saying you grew up in Dumfries, obviously I have the Irish connection as well and stuff. But like, how was that for you as a creative person? Was there a lot going on in Dumfries, or was it quite like not a lot of creative stuff going on? How was it?
You know, I think like, when you're in the middle of it and when you're grown up, I think I was very much like, I hate where I'm from, and like, I want to move to the city, and I want to, you know, like, make something for myself. But, you know, so when I was growing up, it really felt like there wasn't like a scene, there wasn't like a, like, it didn't feel a particularly creative place. But actually, when I look back now, I'm like, oh no, it is amazing that there's a lot of festivals now happening in Dumfries, kind of like open door gallery festivals, a lot of music comes out of Dumfries. And so it is a really creative place. But I think also it's like, when you're this person, like, you know, when I was there wanting to make films, I really was just like alone in that. Like, I really, you know, my teacher at the school were so good and supportive of it, and you know, my parents were supportive, but they were also like, yeah, but you need to like, you need to like get a real job. And then so they were very much like, yep, you go and get the film degree, yep get the student loan, sit with that, but actually you need to like actually make a career out of this. But yeah, so in Dumfries, yeah, I felt the answer, I'd say growing up, my answer would be no. But looking back, I'm like, maybe there was, and I just didn't know where to find it or didn't know where to look. Yeah. And of course, this was like pre-internet, right? And I feel like, well, yeah, we're like kind of internet just forming, like Bebo, I guess, was out.
Yeah.
Remember Bebo?
And then like smartphones sort of crept in and
exactly.
roughly high school and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, but like slowly, and now it's totally unrecognisable.
Exactly. So I feel like, for young people living in Dumfries now, I feel like there will be more opportunities, but also like now they'll be able to see advertisements on TikTok for like film clubs. And so I hope there's more going on. But I also felt like my parents don't live in Dumfries anymore, so I feel like this huge sense of nostalgia for it, and I write about it quite a lot now. And I remember when I was making films in high school, like one of my teachers was like, why don't you shoot something like about being a young person in Dumfries? And I was I'm always so allergic to like what my current situation is. I can't see it. I was like, no, that's boring. Dumfries is ugly. I don't want to. But I, honestly, like, I would love to go and shoot a film there, because I'm just like, I know the place like the back of my hand, and I just really want to put a camera on it, and in a way to like, in my own memory, to make sure that, to cement it, I guess, in my own memory. But yeah, so, but honestly, when I moved to Edinburgh, like, my mind like completely exploded. It was just like such a huge life experience to like move from small town to, well,
I can kind of relate, because like, you know, moving from a town like Glenrothes to Edinburgh was felt amazing at the time. You know, oh my God, people are into film and they want to work on these shows and do the, well, not those shows at the time, but you know what I mean? Like longer term, and they're into the same stuff. And it's like, you grow up somewhere where, you know, there's not a lot going on, and then suddenly there is. But I look back where I'm from quite nostalgically. So my parents still live there, but like, in my head, I'm like, I'd love to see, you know, this place represented. Which is, even when I was saying earlier to you, like, you know, even hearing like the character Lee and Dinosaur say that he's a Raith Rovers fan, such a tiny thing, but that, I love that little bit of representation.
Yeah.
It's really powerful. So the idea of being able to do that, you know, some, that's why I love asking this question about where people are from, because I think a lot of creative people always, most of the time, have quite a link to where they're from somewhat, and it usually influences them quite creatively as well.
Yeah, and I think that's so interesting what you're saying as well, because I think that was like, Lauren, who plays Lee, is his actual favourite football team. And that's what I love so much about making stuff, is that everybody brings their own perspective and their own experience. And everybody just wants to Easter egg their own stuff, which is so funny. Like David, who plays Bo, the brother, he Easter egged so much in the show, and like so many good one-liners that we had to cut. But yeah, it's just, it's, I love when people try and represent themselves and where they're from and put jokes in for their friends. Like I'm so here for that.
No, one of my favourite things as a script editor is we do the copy for, like, so say there's a book in the script, sometimes art will be like, can you write some words for this stuff. My favourite thing is putting my friends' names on TV. So in Screw, which of course David Carlisle was in episode 4 of season 2, and he was so good in that show, in Screw. I was watching the first episode, then I was surfing for ages. Where did I know this guy from?
Yeah.
He was obviously, I'd seen him on set, and I just couldn't put it in words. But yeah, I love doing that. Like, getting my, you know, even if it's a tiny thing, like just getting your friend's name on screen, it's like your own little tiny Easter egg, which as a script editor you don't get to do as easily as, you know, if you're writer, director, etc.
Yeah.
But you know, you get, it's like, yeah, you'll get a little bit of influence on it. That's really interesting.
I totally was so that doing that in a dinosaur, like Nina has the exact same cape cup as me. And then all of a sudden I started to be like, oh, what about this for Nina? I was like, fuck, like I've got that. I can't like just design her after what about my jumper? You know, like I had to like stop myself, but I also didn't have time to actually do anything. So really, yeah, so there's tiny things like that.
No, it's all really interesting. This is another just a little fun question before we get into some of the more careery stuff, but like, do you have a favourite word or phrase from growing up in Dumfries or just Scotland in general?
Yeah, you know what, I actually was thinking about this and I don't, because weirdly enough, like growing up in Dumfries, both my parents are Irish and they now live back in Ireland, and to me it was like Dumfries was quite temporary. I knew that my parents were going to leave, like I didn't feel like we were going to immediately leave, like I was going to have to move as a kid or anything, but it very felt like it wasn't their forever home. Yeah, so I can't think of a word from Dumfries, but people from Dumfries are called Dunhamers, which is fun, but I can't think of an actual colloquial word, and I don't think I have it in my vocabulary because I feel so, I guess, like more ingrained, or like more, my parents were dragging me more towards Irish culture than
they were
towards
Irish word then, like,
you know, I don't, there's more phrases. It's kind of like, I saw a TikTok the other day and I was like, this is so funny. What was it? It was like a woman, there's a phrase that people say in Ireland that they say like, I'll leave you to it when they leave a conversation, but it kind of basically means like, I don't want to talk to you anymore, but it has that really, like that friendly, like I think there's so much like secret coding that I don't even notice, but that kind of thing, like I'll leave you to it, it's funny.
No,
even though it doesn't sound that good, but
I don't know why, but Ireland, I don't know if it's because there's some similarities in Scotland and Ireland, but the other country I always look up to in terms of their art and like their culture, I just like feel really, I don't know why, I've always loved, I think just the Irish punch well above the weight culturally, like all the films that come from there, all the actors at the moment, obviously Paul Mescal and like Andrew Scott, all these people, and like Sally Rooney, all the books and stuff, they just seem to be like, I don't know, more visible than Scotland anyway at the moment.
Yeah,
I think Scotland could easily be on the same level 100%, but like, so I don't know, I just love Ireland and like, I just watch anything. If it's Irish, I'm like, I'll just watch it.
Yeah, I think you're so right. And I think even for the size of Ireland versus how many, like they've got like 2 Nobel Peace Prize winners, right? And like all, obviously all the actors, the writers, the poetry, the music. And I'm just like, there's something in the water. There is. Because I think also, you know, from a funding aspect, I don't know like the ins and outs of it. I haven't applied for anything funding wise, but I know that they've kind of got a really good feature film scheme kind of set up and things like that. And but I also know that, you know, like from just talking to filmmakers that I know in Ireland, it's also like not easy either, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of this, I think there's this like pressure of like how much great art comes out of Ireland, but I don't know if they've, if the infrastructure is actually there for young people at the moment.
Yeah, or if it more just feels from the outside like it would be. Yeah, it's interesting. I was actually speaking to a friend the other day, I was on a hike with him, and like he's got quite a strong connection down from family and stuff. And he was just saying, his observation on this, we were talking about this exact thing, was Scotland tended to produce like scientists and engineers historically, whereas the Irish have always had their, you know, great poets, great authors, like and stuff like that. And I just wondered if there is just maybe something slightly culturally, as you say, in the water there, that maybe just makes them have that little edge on us, maybe. I'm not saying we're bad, I think there's loads of great things here, but
I think you're so true. I think you are so true. There is something, and I don't know what it is, but I want to find out and I want to be part of it.
No, it's really interesting. A lovely tangent to go down. Well, I sort of want to ask, like, when you, so you obviously went to uni, studied like your film course at Edinburgh Mayfair, and when you, so you graduated and you were saying that you sort of worked jobs, you were just doing stuff on the side. So what was the sort of pathway like before? I know you did some shadow schemes like Channel 4 and things, but like how did that all look for you at the time?
So I graduated from uni and I remember being like, great, I'm a screenwriter and director now. And my student loan immediately ran out, obviously, as they all do. And I was like, oh God, right, okay, I'll move back in with my parents. I moved back to Dumfries. And I stayed with them for about 9 months. And I remember, like, you know, they are so supportive and I do love them so much. But I remember, like, I took over my brother's room, he didn't live there anymore, and his
room became my office. And I think my parents were very like, what is going on? And I would like be in his room, and I was writing Farmland at the time. But Farmland's like a short, it's like 15 pages. Mm-hmm. And I didn't need to work on it 9 to 5, like Monday to Friday. But I did. And then, so I was kind of there for 2 weeks. And then my mom was very much like, you know, you need to get, you know, you'll need to get a job. And I was like, yeah, yeah, but you know, like I'm a writer, like I'm going to try and get an agent. It's going to work out. Mm-hmm. And she was like, no, like you're going to have to pay digs. And I was like, but I'm your daughter. So then my mom's like, you have to pay digs. 24 hours later, I get a phone call from the local hospital. So I was on a 0-hour contract for the NHS. So as soon as I turned 16, I was like a cleaner after school. So I would go and clean for like 3 hours. I would do the back shift. So I was on a 0-hour contract, and every summer at uni I would go back and just like make a bit of money and then move back to Edinburgh to study that year. So then I didn't have a job throughout the year. I didn't make enough to...
Yeah, sort of save up.
Yeah, it wasn't enough to like get by on, but it was like enough for like pints and stuff. So I was like, which essentials. And so I was on still on a 0-hour contract. So 24 hours after, my mum's like, you need to pay digs, you need to get a job. The hospital were like, are you back in Dumfries? And I was like, maybe. And they were like, oh, do you want to come in and do a night shift? And then I was like, okay, great. And then from that moment on, I was like 12-hour shifts at this hospital. And I was a cleaner stroke porter by that point. But I think at the time, I was working there for 9 months. And at the time, I was like my grad from Good Girls was kind of going out to festivals and stuff. I was writing Farmland, but I was so kind of, like, I guess quite lost, actually, like, coming out of uni and being like, oh, God, actually, this is... I knew it was going to... I didn't think it was going to be a walk in the park, but I was a bit like, oh, no, this really is depressing. And but I think now that I look back on it, it was such a formative time because, firstly, a 12-hour, like, shift at the hospital is basically the same as being on set. Like, it's... You feel... Like, the way your body feels at the end of the day is the exact same as being on set.
Interesting.
And although as, like, a porter, I'm, like, physical, manual labour, and, like, on set, I'm obviously just, like, thinking very hard all the time.
I think they're still both very taxing in different ways, though.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I think what was good about working at the hospital was that I learned to like pitch. So like part of my job was to take patients to and from like surgery or to x-rays and things like that. And it's very much like having this customer service of like, how's your day going? Are you nervous about the surgery and things like that? But then they would be like, yeah, I'm a bit nervous. And I'd be like, cool, well, I'm making a short film and it's called Farmland and it's about this. So I'd like learned to pitch. And I kind of found that if you could pitch, and I'd obviously read the room, like if I would really vibe like emotionally how they were. But if, I think if you can make like a sick person laugh, like you're kind of on the right track. So I was like, okay, great. So kind of learned to pitch and got used to these really long days and things like that. By the time it hit Christmas, my film Good Girls got into Flicker Fest in Australia.
Amazing.
And then I had just been like saving money. Obviously I was paying digs, but the digs weren't that much. So I was just like, had like a few £1,000 and I was like, I'm going to go to Australia. So then I just like literally booked a flight like Christmas Day or Christmas Eve. And then 2 days later I was in Sydney. And so I went out for a bit and I honestly didn't do anything, just like sat on a beach and like continued to write, apply for an internship, and then came back from Australia completely peeling, definitely had sun damage, not proud of that. And then interviewed for like a internship, like office assistant internship, and then got the job and then moved back to Edinburgh. And then basically worked at Film House stroke Film Festival for like 3 years, 2 or 3 years. I was an intern and then my boss at the time left, so they kind of kept me on. And I have so many fond memories of working at Film House, but I was like definitely a personality hire. I really don't think I was good at admin, but it was like really fun to be there and to feel like you were part of the industry in some way. We weren't obviously making films and we were
still
showing
around
them.
Like many people, you're sort of, you're near it. I think
yeah.
That always helps.
Exactly, exactly. And it's even like when the Film Fest was coming, it was always so exciting. And so worked there for 2 or 3 years, and that was kind of like 9 to 5, like minimum, well, like living wage, I guess. I don't know if it's any different. I don't know. Living wage. And obviously like Edinburgh was expensive, so I was in my overdraft and I would spend like every holiday and every weekend writing or making.
Yeah.
So I kind of really burnt myself out that way, because it came to a point where I'd been working straight for like 3 years at this point, and I really was not, I don't think I was in a good place. Like, although I was having a fun time and I like made loads of friends at Film House and things like that, I just feel I was kind of really not impatient. I wouldn't say impatience, maybe not the word. I think I was maybe desperate. I was really like, I really need to catch a break. And I just felt like I was working so hard and nothing was coming back. And like I say, I was in my overdraft. It was like actually hard to live. And then I got this like cold email from a producer who was like, hey, I saw Farmland and I've got this project and like I need a shadow writer. Long story short, she also was like, I have this agent who saw Farmland who really wants to talk to you.
Oh, wow.
So then I kind of got my agent through that. So I went down to London. I literally had to borrow money from my mum. I was like, can I borrow some money to get a train to London for the day and take a day off work? And I guess just got signed by this agent and went down and they were like, what are you working on? And I said like, oh, I'm working on this, I'm writing this, I'm developing this, I'm going to do this, I've just shot this, I've just cut this. all this stuff. And then I was like, and I've got a full-time job. And then they were a bit like, oh, you kind of, basically they were kind of insinuating you can't do this if you've got a job. Like, but I was a bit like, yeah, but like, I have to pay my rent. Like, I kind of made the decision. I was like, right, I'm going to quit Film House. I'm going to get like a cafe or a hospitality job. That's something that, that's a bit more flexible.
And it gives you more, the time.
Yeah. And then I remember going to my boss at the time, who honestly, I owe so much to her. Like, I genuinely like, owe so much to her, because I said, like, look, this has happened. I'm really excited about it. And I just feel like if I want to do this, I have to leave and get something more flexible. And she said to me, she said, you are more valuable to Film House as a future filmmaker than you are as an admin assistant. So how about we do like a job share, you drop down to part-time, we get someone else in, we can be flexible around, you know, if you have to do something, then they can come and be full-time. And I was just a bit like, this is like the biggest gift that anybody could give me. That's this incredible. Is amazing.
Yeah.
And then went part-time. And then at the same time as getting this agent, I kind of got like this feature film contract to write it. And it was based on IP. It wasn't my original idea. And I remember getting the contract through, and I remember seeing this number written down, and I was like, what the hell is this? It's like, I was like, the most amount of money I'd ever seen written down on a page, you know, like, you know, at the time for kind of my situation. And I was like, this is wild. And then I quit my job. And then, thank you so much for your loyalty, I'm out. But I quit my job, and then my first day of freelance was first day of lockdown.
Fuck.
So yeah, it was like I remember
this go far now.
Yeah. And I was a bit like, oh no. So it actually worked out. Like, I eventually got fired from the job, actually, which is like another story for another time. So I was basically writing that film for like 2 years alone in my room, and obviously lockdown was like an insane time for everybody. And then I guess by the time we got out of lockdown, again, I just got like loads of like little writing assignments. I haven't produced any of the stuff I was paid to write, but was writing pilots or two pagers and selling ideas and stuff. And then Mark Bignall at BBC Studios. And do you know Sarah Grant and Katrina
Sarah
Allen?
Sarah Grant's been on this podcast. We did a two-parter at the HB Film Festival last year. It was a panel with her, Ashley and Sonia. I've forgotten their surnames, so I don't want to say them wrong on the podcast. I don't do too many of these. I forget everyone's surnames now.
Oh my God,
And she was, of course, in, you know, your pilot as
well. Stunners, yes. It was their pilot, and I think they'd just seen my work, and I knew of them. I hadn't met them or anything, and then they'd put me forward to direct, and then I met with Mark Bignall, who's a producer at BBC Studios, and then that was the like shot that, which was so much fun. And again, it was that absolute challenge of comedy, no money, no time. But it was a lot of fun, and I think we really wanted to make something that was special. And I think something that I've always been quite passionate about is making comedy that is like aesthetic, you know, that is like aesthetic and it looks nice and it could stand up to kind of American sitcoms. You know, I felt like we kind of missed that a bit in Scotland.
You've done it now,
well, I'm so lucky to have got the opportunity, but I felt like there's so much good comedy in Scotland, but I'm also like, why couldn't it look like a film, and why couldn't it look indie and, you know, like do something cool? And I think Stunners was kind of the start of that, of wanting to, you know, we shot like a wide aspect ratio, and it was so much fun. And I think that started my collaboration with Mark, who I then went and did The Farm, which was like a full episode of TV. So that was like the first credit. And
some quite like well-known Scottish comedians and stuff in that
Which was so great. And it was so funny. It was just so much fun. It was like a summer camp, and it was like a five-day shoot, which at that point was my longest shoot as a director. And so yeah, that happened. I've just made another short with Mark. Like, you know, I'm such a fan of his. But before that, actually, I did do a Channel 4 shadow director scheme, which I think was so important. And I was shadowing Damon Beasley on Robert Popper's show, I Hate You. And it was like a 6-week shoot, and I was there every single day. Like from the moment that Damon was there to the moment he left set, I was with him. And I think it was really interesting to watch him work. And he's obviously so good at what he does, so he looks effortless when he's doing it, right? And it just felt like I got to know the crew and really got to, I think it was a really great example of like the social temperature of a shoot. And I think it was a great shoot, but you could feel like cracks maybe starting to come at the end, you know, just in terms of like, okay, we've got...
people are feeling overworked and stressed, that very common.
Yeah, exactly. And it was also kind of still COVID, so we were all like testing all the time. There's COVID shutdowns and things like that. But that was such a great experience. And, you know, Damon was really kind to me, and so was Robert, and really generous. And so yeah, I'd had that. So I kind of felt like getting The Farm... So I did like a mini pilot, I did a full episode, I'd done all these shorts, and I did this full director shadow scheme. I really felt like I was at the point where I was like, I feel like I've ticked kind of the checklist basically to be able to be considered for kind of bigger jobs, and that's what I wanted to do. And I had interviews for bigger jobs before and just didn't get them because I felt like I was always there in the room trying to prove that I was capable.
Interesting.
But then interestingly enough, when Dinosaur came along, when I read the script, because normally you just get sent one script and then you have like a chat, which is actually a meeting, which I think is such a problem in this industry of like,
interesting.
Does it happen to you?
Well, so you will do like, so potentially for development script, there's jobs, you'll do like a coffee meet. Again, it's the same thing, but I used to be on the side as well, where you'd meet writers for coffee, and I was always really conscious of how transactional it would be. So what they did at STV Drama, and I love my old colleagues there, but they made it very clear that, like, you know, this is generally just a chat. Like, there's no pressure on it. We don't need to get something at the end of this. We're just chatting. I just want to know who you are. And mate, I think that's so important, because, like, it taught me a lot as well as a young script editor, because, as you say, it's like the horrible, like, what is this? Is there a transaction based here? Like, do I need to behave in a certain way? Like, is there an expectation? And I think it's so, it's just unfair, really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a lot of mysteriousness around a lot of these jobs in this industry as well. It just adds to that.
I honestly think there needs to be an industry standard, because I think this is a huge barrier for a lot of people. And I think even now, you know, post-Dinosaur even, I've been in meetings that I was like, oh, I've went into a meeting thinking I'd already got the job from what the emails were saying, and then was kind of in it being like, wait, this is an interview?
You feel like you're being tested, and it's just a bit weird.
It felt really bizarre, and I was like, oh my god, this is an interview. And then, but kind of feeling I did a terrible job, and then like a month later they're like, oh no, yeah, we want her, but what's the schedule and all this stuff, and you're a bit like, I don't know. And I think it really stressed me out, because I go into these meetings and I'm just there trying to be like, wait, is this a meeting or is it a chat? And I'm just thinking about that, and I don't want to be too, like, I don't want to assume. And so I think there needs to be an industry standard or some kind of change. And I think that's something that I want to do as well, you know, even when I meet kind of like potential HODs and DPs and stuff, I think I adopt that, like, let's go for a chat. And I, in my head, I'm like, I know that I'm going to give this person this job, but it's just a kind of vibe. But I feel like I need to, even I need to practice what I preach, you know.
It's hard though, right? Because we don't have HR in this industry. There isn't that industry standard. A lot of the time people are getting jobs because they know people.
Exactly.
And it's really difficult, because then it's easy for us to sit here and say that's a problem, but then we work in a system we know. And then obviously you want to work with people you like and you know. So it's really hard, because we. I feel that sometimes you are a hypocrite. Like, I want to get this person this job, but it's not how it works. Not that I'm really in a position to get people jobs at this stage of my career, but I do see why you would be like, I trust that person.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially if you're going to work with them on a big budget, or, you know, money involved, and you want people you trust and stuff, so it's difficult.
Exactly. It's such a weird one, so so I guess, like, that's what happens to me, is, like, I get sent a script and then I have a chat, and which is kind of an interview, but kind of not. And when Dinosaur, I got the script for Dinosaur, and then it would have been last March time, I think. And I had such a, I felt like when I read it, I was like, I just had this feeling about it that I was like, if I don't get Dinosaur, I will never get a job. I just felt like I was made for it. I feel like I felt like I really connected to Nina as a character, and I was so interested in her, and I was really wanting to know what happened next. And I thought what drew me most to Dinosaur was that we had, you know, we were centred around an autistic character, but it wasn't about autism. It was very much about Nina as a character.
It's about sisters and friendship and family. It's exactly. It doesn't feel like, as I was saying, to, I think, I can't remember what I said off air and what I said on air. But, you know, it's not preachy.
Yeah.
And I think and I don't think there's a problem with things that are preachy sometimes, but, like, it's nice to see something like this that feels just like, it's just, this is, these are the characters.
Exactly. And it's
one of them just happens to be autistic. It's not the main thing of the show.
Exactly. And I thought what was so nice is that, you know, our autistic centric character, she knows exactly who she is. And when her sister does, you know, like, lay the news that she is getting married, Nina's all of a sudden, like, her entire world's turned upside down. She really thought that she would live with her sister for the rest of her life. But I think what's nice is that she knows exactly who she is. And to me, she's, like, the coolest character, Nina. And yeah, she comes across challenges, but she's not struggling, she's not an outsider, she's not, you know, like, othered in any way. It's everybody else that's around her that is trying to be someone they're not. And I thought that was such a refreshing kind of look. And even when I was reading it, like, the scripts are so funny, and episode one's written by Matilda, who is the co-creator, and there's something in it of, like, there's so many options, it just felt kind of like, how heightened do we go with it? Because when I read it, it really felt like Nina was grounded and everybody else, like, was slightly heightened, because there is that kind of, like, the inconsistencies of neurotypical people. Like, as soon as someone gets married, we all shit our pants, right? And it's like, it's weird. And I think that's what I really loved about it. So when I read it, I just connected to it, and I was like, I went into these meetings, and I, you know, when people say, you know, if you're pitching for something, never give everything away. I went into this meeting and I said absolutely everything I thought. I was like, oh my god, it could be like this, it could be like that. Oh my god, what about this? I didn't feel like I had to hide anything. I didn't have to feel like I had to restrain myself. I really was just so interested to hear what they wanted as well, because they had made a pilot a few years ago, and, like, the show that we've made is completely reworked from pilot. Like, Nina's a very different kind of character, and it was just interesting. I just wanted to know everything. So I had one meeting with them. I went away and I made this, like, massive pitch deck. It was just, like, images, like, you know, like, 30 pages basically of vibes, and then I sent it to them, and then we had a second meeting, and that's when I met Ashley and Matilda in that meeting, and the other execs, and then I got the job. But it was, like, a 6-week process. Like, it was such an all-consuming process of, I was making this pitch, and it was such a good process to do it, and it's something I try and do with for all my jobs, even if it's
kind of immediately have the job, because I think it really just makes you think through it. You know, I think sometimes it's hard. It's hard to make something, because like dinosaur, you know, it didn't exist before we made it, and you know, it's obviously on the page, but there's this, you know, like we made what we made, and I'm so proud of it. But it's also like we didn't know, like we kind of knew the direction we were going in, of course, but we didn't know like what it was going to look like and feel like. And it was so nice to see the cast and crew at the screening at the weekend, because then I was like to people like, is it what you thought it was going to be? Like what? Because they've obviously seen the monster.
It changes so much in post as well.
Exactly.
You can watch them in film and go, funny.
Yeah,
but then you see him posting, it's hilarious. It's exactly. So different, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It is so. But yeah, and then got Dinosaur, and again, like it was just I really felt like it felt right, and I was so like I can't even describe the feeling when I got the job. I was just like, I'm so excited. And it also, like, I think it's important to say as well, like Dinosaur came along at like after a really hard freelance winter of like a really bad patch of like just quiet and really like, I'm talking like pasta for dinner, like plain pasta for dinner, sometimes couscous, but it was a really hard and winter, and that's like the peaks and troughs of it, you know. I'm so proud that Dinosaur's come out, but I'm also very aware that like I could have a couscous winter.
Yeah, and also we're sort of speaking at a time where there is a massive crisis in our industry.
Oh my gosh,
as well. Like,
yeah.
And there was a stat I saw a few days ago, I think I might get this number wrong, but I think it was 60% of people working in TV in February when they were polled were out of work.
It's
might
so
even be
scary.
More than that now,
yeah.
So it's a mental number.
Yeah, it feels worse than COVID, and you know, like I joined the industry during COVID and I was like, is this normal? But actually just, it feels like a really scary time. And I can say for me as well, you know, in terms of the work that I'm currently doing, it's not also that bit like it, like there's things like bubbling away, but it's development, right? It takes, you know, 10 years.
Limbo,
yeah, exactly.
I think it's also, you said this at the start, but people don't realize that you obviously filmed Dinosaur like last year, it's finished it in December, like it's out now, so everyone's like, oh, amazing. In their head they're like, you know, like Neve's working, but that,
like,
you know, that you'd finished on that a while ago, so it's like this isn't just coming out, so there's that delayed gratification as well, which is always bizarre.
No, you're right, you're so true, because I think a lot of people have been messaging me being like, oh my god, I know you're so busy, but like, you know, messaging and stuff, and I'm like, no, like if I'm posting on Instagram I have nothing to do. It's when I'm not on Instagram that's probably when I'm my most busiest, you know. And but yeah, so you're right about the delayed gratification in it, which I think is like also kind of a good thing. I really like really just trying to be as present as possible, you know, on set. And obviously when we're shooting Dinosaur we can't like share anything online anyway, but it's been really nice to finally be able to share photos and like share experiences and stuff. And I also like, I will stop going on about Dinosaur eventually, you know, like even in my personal life it's all I talk about, but it's because it literally was my year last year and it was just like all consuming process. So
no, it is. Well, thank you very much for that like quite concise answer for your pathway from uni to here, because I think it's good for people to hear the honest truth. Wasn't all easy.
Yeah.
You're also being very like honest and saying I was lucky at this point, and then, you know, but it wasn't all easy as well. Yeah. Before we start, I want to ask you a bit, some specific directed questions, but I also, 40 minutes into this, do you want to also tell the listeners like pitch Dinosaur, like what's it about? Because
oh,
we probably
God,
should do that,
course.
Right?
You're so good at your job. Yeah, so I'm so bad at pitching anything. So
I don't know why it's a pitch. Just tell them what it's about.
Yeah,
there's
like
no pressure on this.
Yeah. So Dinosaur, it's a 6-part comedy produced by two brothers.
Who did Fleabag,
which is wild. I remember meeting Sarah, the exec, for the first time, and I was just like, I can't believe this is happening. She's amazing. But yeah, so Dinosaur follows Nina, who is an autistic woman who lives with her sister. She's a paleontologist at the museum. She like loves her life. And then her sister drops the bomb on her that she's getting married. And at that point, Nina's never met this man that she's getting married to. So it's just like, kind of like, whoa, what's going on? There's a bit of processing time. And eventually, I guess the show just basically follows her coming to terms with the changes that are about to happen, and also by the end of the show embracing changes. You know, I think Nina like lives her life and has lived the same kind of life for a long time, and now she's trying to push herself outside of her comfort zone, so there's a lot of fun in it. And yeah, there's a lot of heart as well, and you know, that's what I loved about the script. It's so warm on the page, and I think that's just what we tried to make.
Yeah, and it also feels it's the perfect balance of it's Scottish, it's universal, because it's also on Hulu as well, so it's like, it feels very international, like you were saying earlier, making it feel like a film, but it's also a comedy.
Yeah.
I don't think we do well enough in Scotland, or for whatever reason, I don't think that's a deliberate thing. Maybe fun, again, going back to funding models and stuff, but I think it's really good for our country to have like something like this.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think even today I saw like a TikTok someone had made in America, and it was this woman who was like, I found the most amazing band called Father Send.
We'd also had in this podcast. We had Ross Layton on for the 100th episode, so there's lots of little nice connections.
Oh great, small
world.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, so this woman in America has made this TikTok, and I think like, that to me made me so proud, because particularly with the music in the show, we had Tommy Riley and Roddy Hart. I always mix up, like, their second and first names. But, yeah, amazing. They composed and they supervised. And I really wanted to be a show where the credits music is kind of a new up-and-coming, like, Scottish band, basically. Mm-hmm. And I want people to discover Scotland's talent through the show, you know? And I also wanted it to feel like, you know, I felt like films that are in New York, how they're set in New York, but they never have a Manhattan skyline and they never say the word New York. I kind of wanted that for this show. I didn't want to be too, like, we banned like shortbread, tartan. We really just wanted to make it a contemporary view of Scotland, and we created like a slice of life here. It doesn't represent everybody, but it is just like our chapter, I guess, of this character. And I just really, I'm so excited to see what comes after Dinosaur, because I feel like we've got Dinosaur, but, you know, the next kind of show like this is going to be better and better and better, and I just hope that it just creates more opportunities in Scotland as well.
Fingers crossed. And the other thing I wanted to quickly pick up on what Dinosaur did, which is another amazing thing, it's almost like a pilot for working differently, to quote the name of the film that I was part of last year, and obviously Hannah Curry, who directed, that's been on this podcast twice, but you know, that film was using the training for the film. You tried some different stuff with filming hours and things as well, so can you, like, tell us a little bit about that? Because I think it's amazing that a project like Dinosaur is doing stuff like that. I think the industry needs to change, and it's good to see people trying to find out how that can work.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it was really important, you know, for a neurodiverse story, for us to be as accessible as possible. Mm. And obviously, it is still a set, and the hours are still, you know, like, long, and, you know, we are still under pressure, but we just wanted to make it feel as safe a space as possible, and a lot of what I'm speaking about is what Brian, our producer, set up, but also we worked with Access All Areas, which is an agency and consultancy, I guess, for disabled and neurodiverse talent and actors as well. So we had an Access coordinator called Lucy, who came on board, and basically there was like an access questionnaire. I can't remember an access questionnaire that was just sent to all the crew to fill in if they want to fill in if they don't. And it was very much there to be like, and it didn't have to be specific. It didn't have to be like, you know, I'm dyslexic or whatever. It just had to be like, I get really stressed when we run late. Like things like that, like tiny things that people normally don't think about. Yeah. And then I think it was then so that we could put in place like things basically to make it more accessible. And it kind of was so great to have that in hand with Working Differently, because it's such a great documentary and it's such, like, it's an enjoyable watch as well, and it's kind of like, oh great, like, we can watch this, train people, educate people and enjoy the experience of it. And
it's probably a bit like Dinosaur in the sense that it's very visually engaging and it's not preachy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, take what you know, everyone's gonna take something different from it. And I think what was so good about it was just this thing of, it made me really like think about the way that I work as well, and like I'm just like, what, like, actually even asking myself like, what actually does stress me out, and what could I change, you know? And that was really interesting and good, and yeah, it kind of felt like we put things in place. And the same for, you know, like our cast, like we just made sure that the cast also had filled in those questionnaires and that they had access to someone at Access All Areas if they wanted to talk to them. And I think it's just about having an open communication. And but I think that's what's so brilliant about Ashley, is she's just brilliant. So yeah, and then the training was so good, and obviously you're in the film and the film's amazing as well. So congratulations on that.
No, I mean, it's lovely to see all this stuff actually happen. Again, like, that was like a year and a half ago, so it's like, even now it's like great to see like the benefits of that, like when you watch a show like Dinosaur, because I think all that, as you say, the set life all bleeds through into the final product as well. Yeah. Definitely. I don't like calling it a product.
Yeah, project, so but yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Final project, for the record. I just have some sort of specific director questions. Again, we haven't had many directors on the podcast, but like, can you take us kind of quickly through like a sort of day in the life? So prep, on set, post, like what sort of things are you doing as a director?
So I think what was interesting about prep on this was I had 6 weeks to prep. I had 2 weeks pre-prep, 6 weeks prep. And 6 weeks prep, in my mind, I was like, oh, great. So, like, first week we'll do casting, second week we'll do locations. And in my mind, I thought it was going to be more blocked out. But basically what the 6 weeks of prep is everything all at once. So my day, like a typical day of prep would be, our location base was at Film City in Govan. So I would, you know, walk into work. I shared an office with Brian, the producer, and the finance team. And basically, every day is totally different. But kind of a sample is,
I go in, I have a meeting in the morning, I'll maybe interview a HOD person, and then I'll be sent a bunch of casting tapes. So I'll watch some casting tapes, and then I'll go out to the location recce. I've seen every single bus stop and toilet in Glasgow. It honestly was such a challenge. I see location recce, and then I'll go and meet Jamie in the art department, and I'll go to talk to them about the colours of the walls in the girls' flat, and I'll go around in circles about it and be like, oh no, should their living room be green or pink? I don't know. So we'll have loads of discussions about that. Then I'll maybe like meet with an actor who's been cast, and I like to kind of just chat to them for an hour, like not specifically about the project, just to like get to know them. And then I'll like go and get lunch, but then the cafe's closed because it's too late. And then, so it's just there's so much going, it happens, everything happens at once. And but it's stressful, it's exciting. And I find that if I got really stressed out, or if I felt really overwhelmed or stressed, I would always go back to the script. I'd be like, okay, just go and sit by myself in the corridor and read the script, because that just got me excited again. Because it's so easy to be like, oh my goodness, I'm so, you know, worried about these things, but actually to read the script again is great. And then a day on set is very much kind of like, I would go into work with the DP, and we would work at weekends, so on the Sunday we would shortlist for the entire week, but then in the morning we'd maybe talk about the scenes just to like re-go over the shortlist and stuff like that. And then we get to set, and I would go immediately to set. I'd never really went to the makeup trailer or anything. I kind of wanted people to have space to do what they needed to do. And so I would just like hang about set and kind of get myself in the zone of reread the script, look at the scenes, like figure out the beats. And then the actors would arrive, and I would do a private rehearsal with them and like a block. And that, like, you know, it was different for different scenes, but we got pretty fast at it. Maybe that takes about 15 minutes and 15, 20 minutes. And then once we were all happy with the scene, we would then bring the crew in to do a crew show, and then we would shoot the scene, and then we would shoot another scene, and then another scene. So we kind of shot, I think we shot like 7 pages a day on Dinosaur.
That's very impressive. That's like soap levels.
It's not quite 20 River City pages, but it is, it's fast, like 7 pages. And but it depends what it was, you know, like the scenes that are like two characters, like that's fine. But like we have some scenes where there's like 8 characters and all these eye lines, and it really quickly becomes technical. So we'd shoot kind of like 10-hour days, I guess, and then I'd go home, and then I would prep for the next day. So I'd look at the shortlist, and then I would like put the shortlist in to like how you use scriptation, I guess. I use an iPad, and then go over the scenes, put the shortlist in, draw floor plans and stuff like that, maybe, and then I'd like go to bed, and then I'd forget to have dinner, and I'd be like, oh, and then I'd have to decide, do you want to get up to have dinner, or we'll just have sleep for dinner. It was quite, like, I find that was really intense in Dinosaurs, like, just taking care of myself, like, when
which
I got
I have
home,
a question
it was
about
so
well,
hard.
I'm intrigued to get your answer for shortly as well, about, like, mental health and looking after yourself in this industry, which is impossible.
It is impossible, that's the answer, it's impossible. But yeah, that was that, and then editing, oh my goodness, the editing was the most stressful part of the entire process for me. I find editing, I don't dislike editing, but I just find it really emotional, actually. I feel like I could be on set and anything could happen, and I'm unfazed. I'm like quite focused, and I know I know what to get from the day. But in the edit, I really find it difficult, because we were running 3 edit rooms at once, which I will never do again, which was just so stressful. But I had a really great post team and 3 different editors who were all brilliant, and they all had their own sensibilities, and that was so interesting. And we basically were cutting, like, basically I was doing like episode 1 for 2 hours, and I was jumping into episode 3, and then I would do episode 6,
so
and then I would go back to 1.
Like filming it. I suppose it's rare to do all 6 episodes as well, because most of the time, like, a series of 6 will have, like, you know, 1 block directed to it, so there's a lot for you to get in both.
Definitely. I guess it's like comedy and drama, like drama's more blocky and comedy's more like,
we need to shoot this.
Yeah, like just go. I would just kind of cut for a bit, maybe I'd go and cry in the bathroom for a bit, and then I'd like come back and have my lunch. So that was the toughest part, and I think it's just because of me personally, I just love being on set, and I love being surrounded by people. And
so maybe the people, it's the energy, it's like they're all very different. Yes. That's the process. It's interesting.
Exactly.
Because some directors say they prefer posts, and then some say they like all of it.
It's
interesting.
Yeah.
It's different, I suppose.
I definitely prefer being on set. But yeah, that's kind of an average day.
No, thank you. I think it's useful to be able to just get a little bit of insight into that. I suppose I also want to ask, how did you cope as a first-time director, like, working with some of these actors? Because there's big people like Greg Kemp. I grew up watching Still Game, and, like, you know, so I'd be like, I don't know. It's a big part of Scottish culture. I know there's loads of other amazing actors in the show as well, but was it intimidating a little bit when you're like, or did you feel very comfortable?
Yeah, I felt really comfortable, actually, because I had met Greg like a few times, and I think, and he was always so nice and kind to me. You know, I'd met him just, you know, in passing at BBC or, you know, at like networking events, and we'd always like say hello to each other. And so it felt like, I remember the first time I met him though, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. It was like a 10-minute conversation, but I was like, oh my god. And then, so when his name came up to play the dad, we were obviously like, absolutely.
He's so like, good in that role. It's lovely to see.
Yeah, he's so good. And I think what was so great about Greg and, you know, Sanjeev and Sally, of like, you know, like these comedy legends.
They're
all
iconic Scottish characters in their own rights, aren't they?
Exactly, exactly. And I think what was so great about them is they came to this with so much heart and openness, and they were very much here to support us and they absolutely, I've learned so much from them, but they also were just here and they were patient and they were very like, I never at any point felt like Greg or Sanjeev was like, we know how to tell the joke better. I never felt that. I just always felt like they were there to embrace what was going on, and it was so, I mean, it was amazing. It was really a pinch me moment, and I think all the cast, to be honest, were like, I can't believe I'm working with Greg. Like, all of the cast were so buzzing about it, and it was just really nice. And I think there's something really special as well about us being kind of a new comedy, and we've got, you know, like him to kind of be part of it with us. I think that's so amazing. Exciting and special.
And what sort of were the biggest influences on you as a director for the show?
I kind of spoke about this earlier, but I really just wanted to make something that felt cinematic and not necessarily stylized, because, you know, we've not got much time, but felt cinematic and felt like a specific slice of life, you know. And I wanted it to feel, I really wanted Glasgow to be sunny. I really wanted it to be like warm.
Yeah, it's nice to see that. Slightly misleading, but
very misleading, very, very misleading. But I really wanted to, I wanted to basically make the entire show just feel really nostalgic and kind of like grainy. And because I think so much about it is about Nina and Evie and this sisterhood. And, you know, I think about my brother, I get so nostalgic when I think about kids' photos and things like that, and I wanted it to feel filmic and, nostalgic. So I just wanted it to feel warm as well on screen. I really wanted it, like the script, I really wanted it to feel like a hug, and I wanted it to feel like an enjoyable place to be. I wanted people to get home from like a shit day at work to watch it and be like, you know, they felt like they were entertained by it. So yeah, and I think, I was kind of just influenced by, I guess, like, I can't think of any like actual titles, because I've immediately forgotten every name and title, but like these New York films that are like set in New York, they don't talk about New York, it's just a slice of New York life. I really wanted that to be that for Glasgow. So yeah.
No, it's, I know, it's lovely to see, and it feel, again, it feels very natural without making a big song and dance of it, and it doesn't, you know, its location's almost like a background character without being too announced and stuff. God, that was a very pretentious thing. I also just wanted to sort of quickly ask, like, what your favourite part of being a director is.
Yeah, this is a very good question. My favourite part about being a director, I really love working with people, like, absolutely. And from cast to crew, I just love when someone comes in with their own idea and I'm like, yes, we're gonna do that. I just love collaborating with people. And I think, like, even like cast, also that's also another favourite part, actually, is having something set in stone in my head of like, okay, yeah, I think this is how the scene's gonna feel, and then the cast coming in with their own instincts and kind of blowing all my ideas out the water. And I feel like what I liked about this, and what was a challenge about it, was I've never worked with a cast of 25 before. So there's a lot of characters and a lot of, you know, obviously, you know, like there's a core family and the core friends, but there's wider characters to think about as well. And what I loved so much is every actor has their own instinct, obviously. And I honestly do really trust an actor's instinct, because I'm thinking about 25 other actors plus the crew, plus the shot size, plus
the
time.
The SAs and people in the background.
Thinking about everything. But I love it when they kind of come in and they're just so razor sharp and they just like hit the beat, or they know what it is. And I really just trust that instinct. So yeah, I just love working with people, and I just love the bond that shooting creates. Like, I just love it. And
you
I think
tell people enjoyed working on Dinosaur from the amount of people I follow on Instagram who have just shared their experiences. It's nice to see those good people enjoy that.
Good, we must be so annoying. People must be like, Dinosaur, Shminosaur. Oh, but it's so nice.
Here as well, so I think they're still listening at this point. They're clearly fans. And
so true. I hope so. But you know what is my other favourite part of directing, actually, is when I go to the toilet, someone says on a walkie-talkie, Niamh 10-1, and then when I'm on my way back from the toilet, I hear the same person on the walkie-talkie be like, Niamh's on her way back, Niamh will be with you in two. Like, I love it. It makes me feel like the President of the United States. I feel so important. Like,
the closest thing to that is, for me, when I worked on Screw, we got to wear the headphones at the monitor and sit next to the director, and I loved it. And it's so bad. So I've never admitted this like this, but on the podcast, but like, I just like feeling like, even though I had nothing to, no one really knew, because no one knows what script there is really on set. So me and my colleague Safa would just sit and we'd be with the producers and the execs, you'd just feel really important. And you're like, mm-hmm. I'm a junior member of staff. Yeah. Drop the ego, Jamie. But it's something quite nice about it. So I imagine that would be quite...
Yeah. Okay. And it must be so fun, you know, like, obviously, like, doing all the scripting side of things and, like, working so hard and kind of being away from everyone to then go and see it being brought to life.
Lovely.
That must be so exciting.
It's lovely. You get to see behind the curtain to all these different things. Which exactly. Which you get to learn everyone else's jobs are, and it's
exactly.
really fun.
Exactly. And it must kind of also make you better at your own job as well, because you see the mechanics of it. And
No, it definitely, it gives you that awareness. I'll start to wrap things up, because I've been speaking for just so much more I can ask you, but I want to also ask you about your mental well-being, how you protect that, especially when you're working these crazy days, working on Sundays, working at weekends, going home and not knowing whether to have soup or just go to bed, etc. Like, how do you protect your mental health in this industry, obviously when you're filming, but also now when you're maybe in a quieter time and being creative and stuff?
Yeah, I think that's such a good question, such an important question. And I know everyone will have their own different versions of it, and I hope someone knows the answer, because it is, you know, every day is so
right
different.
Answer, is it?
So I think remaining positive, but also like actually just treating, I try to treat myself the way that I would treat the cast or the crew and not talking shit to myself, basically. I think it's so easy to, you know what, I think I was surrounded by such a great team, but actually being a director, it can absolutely be lonely.
It can be quite lonely, because you're almost like, I'm not, and I can't relate because obviously I don't do that job, but like from speaking to directors and stuff, it's like you're almost like a leader as well. And at quite a young age, you're sort of like the director of the show. And it's a lot of pressure on that. And it's sort of everyone is waiting for you to go and sort of make everything happen almost. I know there's loads of other roles that are vital and stuff, but I suppose that if you're stressed, then you seem to be like struggling, then it might have an impact on other people, and that's a lot of pressure to carry.
Yeah, no, definitely, because I think I'm also someone who, if someone's stressing out, I really absorb that energy.
And I think I'm really good at it, pretending that I'm not stressed.
Wow, that's
but
a good skill.
Like, I'm really,
I'm very good at that.
Yeah, I'm really, but in my mind, I'm like, oh my god, I'm flapping, flapping, I'm panicking, but apparently you can't tell. I'm sure I've had my moments, you know, I'm sure people have been like, I remember that day. But yeah, I think you just need to treat yourself with kindness the same way that you would a cast. You wouldn't give your cast member a hard time, you wouldn't give your crew a hard time, so you just shouldn't give yourself a hard time.
No, thank you very much for your honesty answering that, and thank you for your honesty throughout tonight. I think it's really useful for people listening that want to either be a director or want to work in this industry to sort of get a realistic sort of look at it. And you know, it's different for everyone, but I think a lot of people will be sitting and listening going, yes, I totally relate to that name. It's like very much like that. I've just got sort of closing questions for you. It's one question, but sort of two. But what would firstly be your advice to like a young Niamh who's starting out wanting to be a director? And secondly, what would be your advice for somebody wanting to work in the part of the industry you work in?
Yeah, so my advice for people starting out is definitely just to make stuff. But I know that making films is expensive, and you need so much human power. Obviously making films is an expensive thing, even if it's just expenses or just lunch, like that still adds up. But not to sound like a shit bit of advice, but really just like shoot stuff on your phone. I think now I've been on so many panels where people are like, you can shoot on your phone, and you can't, and you can't do it. But I think if you're starting out, you absolutely can.
Just to play around with things, more for yourself.
Totally. And also because if you're starting out and you've never made a film before, you're going to make so many bad films that you may as well make so many bad films on your iPhone, so that when you do get the chance to get a proper camera out there, you're a bit sharper, you know. And I've got all my uni films awful, like all my high school films terrible.
You learn from that, don't you?
Exactly. You learn from mistakes, and you learn from all that. And also, like, I think you need to love it. I feel like if you don't love it when you're like by yourself shooting your own stuff or writing your own stuff, then you're not gonna love it in the big machine of the industry. So make stuff, love it. And also just to keep going. Like, I think it's really easy to compare yourself to other people or feel very much like, oh no, I don't have the best camera, or I don't have XYZ. But surround yourself with friends and people and create your own network, be there to support each other and to help each other along, because it is, you know, like, directing is really lonely. And I think to surround yourself with people, other directors, to like support each other is always great.
Yeah, no, Indra, thank you very much for answering that. And what would your advice be to your younger self?
My younger self.
It's a tough one to answer.
My goodness. It is.
I don't think I have any advice. I think my advice would just be to be a bit kinder to myself. I think I'm my own worst nightmare or like my own critic. And I think it's really important to be kind to yourself. It probably is going to be my advice.
No, completely. Yeah. I think that would probably be my advice to myself as well, to be honest. We're all our hardest critics all the time. Got anything coming up next you want to quickly plug before we wrap up?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm publicly allowed to say, I mean, I don't think I'm not allowed to say, but I've done a
Yeah, so Dinosaur's out now. It's out on BBC Scotland. Yeah, it'll be out by the time
it's on
this
iPlayer.
Yeah,
it's on Hulu. So yeah. We'll link it under the show notes as well.
Great,
so
perfect.
People can click on it.
Yeah.
I'd recommend them to do so.
Yeah, and outside of that, I've just finished a short for Channel 4. It's like not, it's like a playground with Stephen Buchanan, who's
so funny.
Their
podcast is amazing.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah,
they're such a good bunch, and he just did an amazing, like, I think it was like Connor Riley directed it. It was like the real, it's so good. And then it was on an Instagram reel even, and so funny.
And then I've just shot a film for BBC Comedy, also again with Stephen Buchanan
amazing.
And Martin Quinn, and that was a lot of fun. I'm going to be editing that next week. Amazing. So yeah, and then apart from that, honestly, I'm just writing, I'm developing, I'm attached to various things, but nothing, like, you don't know what happens.
Yeah, I understand. No, Niamh, thank you so much for your time today. I've loved this conversation. Congrats again on Dinosaur. It's amazing to see, and you know, I hope you're enjoying all the plaudits from it. And no, thank you so much for your honesty. Honestly, love this conversation. It's been a really nice one to do.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. It's been an honour. And I will always remember this is my first podcast.
Oh, thank you.
So sorry if I kept talking too much, but that's what we're here for.
Well, there you go. That was episode 135 of Just Get a Real Job. Thank you again to Niamh for her time. Greatly appreciate it. Loved chatting to her and really, really enjoyed that conversation. Be sure to go and watch Dinosaur. If you're in the UK, it's all out on BBC iPlayer right now. And if you're, I think, international, you can watch on Hulu. I'm not sure where Hulu makes programmes or puts them out, but it is on that, so... And I'm sure if it's not out where you are, it'll eventually arrive there. But yeah, be sure to watch that. Be sure as well, if you enjoyed this episode, please give it a share on social media. Tell other people to listen. We're always looking to grow this podcast. We have no money. We do this totally independently just because we enjoy doing it. So yeah, if you enjoy it, please give it a wee subscribe, give it a share. This is actually going to be our last episode for a few weeks. We're going to take a brief hiatus because it's just very time consuming doing this. I love it, but I just need a wee break for a couple of weeks. So we'll be back again probably mid-May, maybe a bit earlier than that. Keep an eye on our socials at Just Get a Real Job if you want to see what we're up to in the meantime. But as always, thank you very much to Elliot Mitchell for editing this podcast. Thank you to Amy Dinsdale, who does the artwork for this podcast. And hope you all have a lovely few weeks wherever you are. Just get a real job.